I would like to call to order the public hearing in our Ag and Land Use Committee for February 7th, 2019. And we are going to be going first to House Bill 2456. And I'd like to ask Representative Finley and his panel to come on up. And we also have on our, what do I call it? Our speaker. We are on the phone with folks from Eastern Oregon, and they will unmute themselves when it's their turn. And we have Shauna Peterson, Tiffany, I believe it's Kryshak, and Ralph Poole. And so they will introduce themselves and the roles that they play when they testify for us online. And Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members of the committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Lynn Finley, the State Representative for House District 60, representing Malheur, Harney, Baker, Grant, and part of Lake Counties. I'm here today to discuss with you House Bill 2012, the Eastern Economic Development Region bill that passed this body in 2017. I'll get there. Due to the area being in a severe economic disadvantage in comparison to neighboring Idaho, the Eastern Oregon Border Board, as it's commonly known, consists of an area in Malheur County along the border with Idaho, begins north of Ontario, west towards Vail, south towards Adrian, and intersects the Snake River once again. The bill that created the Border Board also created a board to oversee that board, appointed by the governor to study the issue to specifically promote workforce and economic growth, facilitate development or prevent decline of regionally significant industrial sites, create and maintain jobs in the region, improve access to career and technical education, workforce training programs, higher education to advance a qualified workforce. The bill before you is House Bill 2456. In response to the above charge that the House Bill 2012 put out to the Border Board, after a result of nearly a year of hard work, the Border Board drafted several areas of concern, which created this bill and several others coming up before other committees. I ask that the bill be referred to the House Committee, when we're done, to the House Committee on Revenue, because there's two components of this bill. There is the land use component, which is before you. The next is the revenue component of tax credits and ad valorem tax issues. For general information, I had a conversation with the Revenue Committee today. We're still working on a few tweaks of that, so there will be a dash one that comes as a component of that. The workforce, the governing board that developed this proposal consists of seven members from the community, and they have tirelessly worked hard at every issue, and they've got some specific details that we'll get through. And I guess I'll let them have their presentation, and they have some slides. The Honorable Judge Joyce from Malheur County will have some conversation, and we'll take questions when we're done. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll defer to the board.
Thank you very much. At this time, I would like to invite Shauna, Tiffany, and Ralph, in whatever order is appropriate, to join us, and we look forward for your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you for taking the time to meet with us this afternoon, and thank you, Representative Finley. My name is Tiffany Cruikshank, and I am a fourth-generation Eastern Oregon agriculturist. Growing up on a farm and ranch in Willow Creek, Oregon, which you may or may not know where that is, it is a part of the border region. I am acutely aware of the need to protect viable, high-value farmland, and I hope you leave here today with a better picture of what agriculture looks like in Malheur County and the border region, because it is vastly different from agriculture on the western side of the state. Malheur County agriculture has a farm gate value of about $250 million and is fundamental to the county economy, generating about $1 billion due to sales, processing, packaging, and services. I personally work in agriculture sales and transportation, and together with my FFA advisor husband, farm about 130 acres. Agriculture in the border region is extremely diverse, raising vegetable crops, cereals, meat, milk, forages, mushrooms, seed crops, mint, and more. Malheur County grows more acres of onions, sugar beets, and alfalfa hay than any other Oregon county. So to be viable, farm ground must meet certain criteria with regard to soil quality and land, accessibility, water, etc. Our area is unique from the rest of Oregon as we are extremely dependent upon irrigation, since on average only 10 inches of precipitation falls each year, and most of that falls during the winter, which is a non-growing season. Whereas in comparison, Willamette Valley, for example, receives between 35 and 45 inches annually. Water from snowmelt and spring rains is saved in local reservoirs and distributed to farm ground via various local irrigation districts based upon water rights owned by individuals tied to specific ground during the spring and summer growing season. The land is then irrigated through a variety of mechanisms, pipe, sprinklers, and drip tape are all used until it is time to harvest the crops and take the product to market. So even if ground is zoned exclusive farm use, it may not be considered high-value farm ground or even viable for growing crops. And that's for a variety of reasons, but one may be the lack of water tied to said land, depending on the class of soil. There are a finite number of water rights available, and the only way to obtain new water rights is if others are released. Other land may not be suitable for farming because of the type of soil. We have many sandy bluffs here that have a difficult time growing sagebrush, let alone a good crop for harvest. As you can see in House Bill 2456, we have been very sensitive to the fact that Oregon has thoughtfully crafted rules and legislation to protect farm ground. Only lands that have met the criteria in the bill would be eligible for rezoning. And I would like to point out that the lands must not have been employed for farm use in the three prior years, and the land must not be considered high-value farmland as defined by Oregon statute. High-value farmland is land in a tract composed predominantly of soils that at the time are either irrigated and classified prime, unique, class 1 or 2, or not irrigated and classified prime, unique, class 1 or 2. To clarify, class 1 lands contain soils having few limitations for cultivation, and class 2 lands contain soils having some limitations for cultivation. In Malheur County and the border region specifically, there are many areas zoned for exclusive farm use that fall into land classes such as 6 or 7, which are unsuited to cultivation. My home, for example, is built on EFU land zoned as class 7. We struggle to grow a decent lawn, even with proper management and soil corrections. As you will hear and see in the slides, our for sale home and building site inventory is extremely limited when compared to our competition across the Snake River, Idaho. We are not here asking to be like Idaho. We are asking for a thoughtfully fashioned fix that is specific to our border region. I understand that it may be easy to think that this will be a slippery slope, but our Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Board has been tasked with making the border region more competitive with Idaho, and this is a step in the right direction. Malheur County and the border region are unique, and we must adapt to survive. If you look at the numbers provided that Shauna and Ralph will touch on, communities a few miles away are prosperous, while we lose out on taxpayers and community supporters because of limited inventory of homes and building sites. This topic of land use has been the number one issue farmers and ranchers have brought to me as a member and representative on the Eastern Oregon Border Board. The agricultural community in the border region do not want to give up their high-value, viable farm ground. They want to rezone, as an example, sagebrush-riddled ridgelines so we can attract individuals and families to live and work in Malheur County, people to send their kids to school, shop in our grocery stores, people who want a small acreage with a little privacy and room for an FFA project to thrive. I urge you to support House Bill 2456 and trust that the agricultural community in the border region is fully aware that our most precious resource is high-value farm ground. I'm going to turn it over to Shauna and Ralph to go over some of the numbers.
This
is Shauna Peterson. I am chair of, we affectionately call the Border Board. It's less of a mouthful. Next, we thought that the best use of our time would be to describe to you the stark contrast between what is literally, you know, a couple miles away across the Snake River in Idaho and what is on our Oregon side of the border region. The two points I'll touch on before handing over to Ralph Poole to detail a little of the numbers that you also have in front of you in chart form. Two points. The first, Tiffany aspire to be like Idaho. Their economy is thriving. Their growth is certainly outpacing ours. Their average wage is significantly higher. Their demographic is on paper better. But that has come at a cost. It's a relative patchwork over there without a lot of planning and without virtually any protections for what is truly, really high-value farm ground. We don't believe that that's in the best interest of Oregon or the border region. Growth at all costs is never a goal of our board or the state. But taking that to its practical extreme, we are seeing basically six-fold growth on the Idaho side of our border and on our side, and it's impacting our ability to even sustain. So we'll go through the numbers covering growth on the opposite side of the border and also inventory, because we believe that's pertinent to showing that there is a need to open up a bit of this rural residential, again, within reason and, again, meeting Oregon's land use goal.
Ralph Poole. I am also on the Border Board, as Representative Finley referred to. Our Border Board Committee has been listening for the last year, trying to determine what makes the best sense for spending the $5 million that House Bill 2012 allocated to our border region over here for economic development. Process was to start by just trying to figure out how to create jobs, and it quickly led us to understand that if businesses are going to locate in our border region, they have to have places for their employees to live, to get educated, other issues. But the major issue that we find that have been stumbling blocks to get further to economic development in our region are places to live. Our local hospital has a hard time bringing new doctors in because there are not many, or if any, there are not any places that they can build homes. As many of you know, several years ago, the state of Oregon placed one of the largest state prisons, Snake River Correctional Institute, just outside the city limits of Ontario, about 5 miles. And that employs somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,200 people. And in excess of 70% of those people that work at Snake River are now living in Idaho, which, as far as the Border Board is concerned, is a travesty. To have employees working especially for state institutions and then living outside of our border region just doesn't make any sense. Part of the problem is availability of sites. I'm not sure, it's hard for us to see what you guys are looking at as far as the slideshow or the PowerPoint presentation
We're looking at the border region new home comparison. Would you like us to move on?
Let's start.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the one that talks about the total land area in Malheur County versus Payette County? Have you seen that one yet?
Yes.
Is that Malheur County has a tremendous amount of geography, and so we're comparing a place that is substantially larger than our nearest competitor in Idaho, which is Payette County. Now, if you look at those border region new home comparisons, you can see that going back to 2014, we have substantially underperformed any kind of growth in new homes in our market. And the most dramatic, obviously, is last year, where our region developed 23 new homes, and in Idaho, just across the river, 148 new homes. So it's painfully obvious to see. It takes only a matter of driving around to see the new development going on. And as Tiffany said, we're not asking for to take our best farm ground. We do not care to see our county turn into a patchwork quilt of cornfields and subdivisions side by side. And so we think that with the help of Representative Finley, a lot of care and thought process has gone into presenting House Bill 2456. We have a lot of other numbers, some of which are not in your presentation or that you will see there in your PowerPoint presentation. We got some in from the local realtors just today. In 2018, for small acreage homes, in other words, single-family homes less than 1 acre, Malheur County in 2018 had $27 million worth of expenditures. Payette County had $60 million worth of expenditures. It's painfully obvious when we sit down and go through our analysis of what has happened to our region, and with the difficulty that all of our municipalities are having in this region, trying to meet budgets with especially the continuing rising cost to PERS. One of the helps for our county, for our school districts, for our college, we have Treasure Valley Community College here, for all of the cities in the region, they need tax dollars, and the best way to do that is to put tax revenue onto the assessed values. And we need additional lands and sightings for those homes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we do have this the slides, and we will put them up on OLIS so everyone can see them. Judge Joyce.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Post, members of the committee. Thank you for having us today. My name is Dan Joyce. I'm the county judge from Malheur County. I strongly support House Bill 2456. This bill is essential for the economic development and prosperity of the Eastern Oregon border region, which is currently at a severe disadvantage in comparison to the neighboring Idaho. There are very limited housing and development options in this area, and the people who choose to work in Oregon but live in Idaho, which is devastating to this local economy. Passing this bill will help attract more residents, adding to the overall tax base, create social stability, and add to the general welfare of the community. As an addendum, we've lost over 700 people in our last county count. So our ask is basically a postage stamp compared to what is available. So members, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, I'd ask you to please advocate for our community and pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, before I take any other testimony, is there any questions for our beginning speakers? Yes, please, okay. Representative.
Madam Chair today, right? Yeah, excellent. Sure. Just wanted to say thank you, Judge, for coming over. I know that I was, you came over today?
No, I came Tuesday.
I was here when a bus full of people from Malheur County came over a few years ago, and it really is impactful knowing that you made the trip for this. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? So thank you very much, and we'll go on Do we have another one? Yes, Representative Brock Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to also thank you, Judge, for coming all the way over. It's always a pleasure to see you. And I miss our wonderful conversations when we were commissioners and judges together.
Right, right. Enjoyed working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So at this time, then, we'll go on. We have about four people who have signed up also to testify. And I would like to invite up Nathan. Is it Hoverkamp? Okay, Nathan. And then in the second seat, we can have Peggy Lynch. And the third seat, Ellen Miller. Go first. Hoverkamp, okay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Chair McLean, members of the committee, I'm Nathan Hoverkamp. I'm the Wildlife Program Director for Central Oregon Land Watch. Central Oregon Land Watch has a mission of achieving a responsible, balanced approach to planning for and conserving Oregon's land and water resources east of the Cascades, while recognizing the needs of future generations. We work to protect and conserve the region's ecosystems and wildlife habitats, to foster thriving, sustainable communities, and to spread the costs and benefits of growth equitably across the community as a whole. On behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch, we urge a no vote on HB 2456, which seeks to facilitate rezoning of exclusive farm use lands to residential zones. We believe HB 2456 undermines the integrity of our state land use system, particularly the protections of EFU lands that have helped to protect Oregon's agricultural industry and heritage for generations. Briefly, our concerns include the following. One, the bill disregards the long-term view of Oregon's land use system. It calls for rezoning of land in eastern Oregon from EFU to residential, where lands have not been employed for farm use in the prior 3 years. This approach ignores the premise of Oregon's EFU designation, which is that the lands are to be protected for future generations. Just because a current landowner chooses not to farm the land for 3 years doesn't change its character or ability to grow crops or sustain livestock. Two, the bill includes vague and imprecise qualifiers. The proposed additional qualifier that lands not be viable for reasonably obtaining a profit through a farm use is also not appropriate. Variables like, quote, viable and, quote, reasonably are too subjective to be meaningful or workable. Linking the exception to high-value farmland is likewise insufficient because that definition refers to soil types, which can indicate suitability for certain types of commodities, but ignores the suitability of that land for other agricultural uses. And finally, three, the bill includes or proposes inefficient use of tax expenditures. The use of tax credits to encourage housing development in rural areas is contrary to the principle that residential development should be encouraged within urban growth boundaries or unincorporated communities. Encouraging such growth in rural areas where such development increases the cost of providing services means that taxpayers will be actively subsidizing more expensive infrastructure costs. So in conclusion, thank you for the opportunity. Central Oregon Land Watch opposes HB 2456. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think we'll wait till the panel's done and then we'll ask if there's questions. So Peggy Lynch.
Good afternoon. Peggy Lynch for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And we too oppose House Bill 2456. On a really personal note, I want to share that I do know where this area is. My husband's paternal grandparents are buried in the Vale Cemetery. We have enjoyed the Bully Creek Reservoir when we have visited that area. So I want to make sure for those who are listening and who do support this bill that we're not coming at this from some area that we don't understand the issues. I also call in and listen to the regional solutions team's conversations. So I hear the issues around the needs in far eastern Oregon. Oregon agriculture is the most stable of Oregon's industries. This is industrial land. The other point that I want to make sure that people understand that cattle don't need class one and two soils, and cattle is either the first or second agricultural crop in Oregon. So those are really important things. We are supportive of broadband expansion and things, and I understand Senate Bill 69 just passed the Senate. So there will be additional opportunities for people in our eastern Oregon areas to have the opportunity to grow within their cities. The sewer and water infrastructure in eastern Oregon towns needs to be invested in. I do understand that that Representative Finley actually helped make the city of Vail increase their sewer and water systems, so that there will be opportunities for housing. It's not as if we don't want housing in eastern Oregon. We just want to use them in the most appropriate way, which would be in our cities and towns. We do support comp plan and development code updates to make sure that those cities and towns have the appropriate zoning so that they can have as much housing as necessary where we have the infrastructure. We are concerned about the addition of exempt wells, since it was mentioned the concern about water issues. By adding more and more rural residential, they have an opportunity to drill holes, and the people that need irrigated agriculture will lose out, as has been the case up in the Umatilla area. So the only other comment I would make was in the tax credit side, we have people who are following tax credits issues. The league usually is not a major supporter of tax credits. If we feel like there is something that has value, then the legislature ought to pay for it and not go in a roundabout way of maybe or maybe not providing these kinds of credits. So thank you very much. We oppose 2456.
Thank you very much. Ellen Miller.
Good afternoon, Chair McLean, Vice Chair Post, members of the committee. For the record, Ellen Miller here representing the Oregon Home Builders Association. Thank you for the opportunity to share some comments today. The home builders, the statewide home builders, do not have a position on this particular piece of legislation. This is typically an issue that is taken up by one of our 13 local chapters that we have. However, to illustrate the state of affairs in this region, we do not have a local chapter that is focused on this area. I was even challenged finding a developer to talk to about this piece of legislation. Several people have told me and just mentioned anecdotally that, well, that's because the developers are setting up shop in Idaho. So this just kind of illustrates and demonstrates really kind of the issues that this border region is dealing with. Despite not having a position on this bill, we at the home builders really feel that the broader conversation about lands that are not being used for working lands or non-resource lands or other resource lands, whatever you wish to call them, is an important conversation for this body to have. So we appreciate you having this conversation here today and just want to thank you for the opportunity to make some comments.
Thank you for being here. Are there questions for the panel? Yes, please. I will start with Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have another panel, or is this the last panel for this?
We have one more person.
One more person.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm not sure exactly who. Maybe the gentleman from Central Oregon. So for 4 years that I've been here, I've heard the plight of Eastern Oregon, and we just saw and heard again. I don't know why anybody lives there anymore. It has moved to Idaho. I mean, frankly, I heard a presentation in December in our Economic Development and Trade Committee by the Eastern Oregon Development Board chair, I think it was, who literally laid out a wonderful sales pitch for why to move to Idaho. So I'm trying to figure out a way, how do we stop that? So now I'm looking for solutions. So rather than I oppose, this is bad, what would you do to get people to stop moving to Idaho and make houses available in Eastern Oregon?
question. Chair McLean, members of the committee, thank you for the question, Representative Post. We at Central Oregon Land Watch generally support what Ms. Lynch at League of Women Voters suggested, is that within the processes and regulations of our current land use system, there are provisions for updating comp plans and providing for sufficient housing. We would support updating comp plans in rural municipalities and counties as well.
My follow-up is, but it's not happening. It's not happening. And so somebody has tried to do something. And it seems like I'm always, in whatever committee I'm in, it's always somebody's wanting to shoot down, I'm sorry, but for, it's a good effort to try to change what is a really a horrendous situation. Idaho is growing by leaps and bounds. We're not over there. And I'm looking for solutions. I'm sorry. I'm really frustrated, not with you and nobody in particular. I'm frustrated with the situation because I have many friends over there. And there is really, between what we've done with minimum wage and a lot of other things for Eastern Oregon and the onions and all that, there's no reason to live there anymore. So I'm trying to find reasons to make it so that people will live there. So I don't know what that takes to judge. I'm sorry, he's laughing back there, but I'm
he's looking at me.
Is he looking at you? Okay. So I would like, if we could, people could start getting together and let's come up with some solutions. And maybe Peggy has
So Vice Chair and Representative Post, just a couple of comments. The first thing that I think people need to understand is that Payette County is frankly has become a suburb of Boise, and Boise is exploding. And so you'd have to cross the river in order to be a suburb of Boise with Ontario. So things that we have supported and continue to support are things about making sure that comp plans and development codes in these small towns and areas exist. There was, in the last few years, an expansion of Ontario's UGB by, I believe it was 100 acres. We are looking to see whether or not there will be success in the transload facility that may be happening in Nyssa. There are some, I have recently read some concerns about the financial situation with that, but it was a part of House Bill 2017, the transportation bill. If, in fact, that can be a successful entity and successful facility, it will increase the opportunity for our agricultural growers in that area and will make it happen. Having 5 and 10 acre lots outside of these cities, why can't the cities grow? I'm more than happy to help support these cities grow.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your answer. And Rep. Bosshart Davis.
Thank you. And I'm not sure who to ask this to, and maybe Laura, you. Do we know how many acres of farmland this would apply to? I almost said dollar amount. Is there a acreage amount? Are we talking 10 acres or like 2,000 acres?
It looks unlimited to me.
But it's not specific at all?
There's a ton of EFU over there, and there's no limits.
Right, but it would be specific to some of the specific.
So, Chair and Representative.
Yes, please. Hart Davis, the bill, House Bill 2456, does limit it to specifically the designated Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region. It's 20 miles. I don't have a square mileage or an acreage, but it's 20 miles from the border. And extends from the cities that have been mentioned, Ontario, Vail, and Nyssa, and the surrounding rural areas. So I don't have a square mileage.
Follow-up? Yes, please.
And that would be, you're describing the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so then it's residential uses provided that, and then there's like 4 or 5 specifics.
That's
so
right.
I'm wondering if you apply those specifics to it, then how many acres are we talking about? Not the actual region, but if you were to put these specifics, the parameters, now what are we talking? How many acres?
Our next speaker might have some comments about that, and we can certainly ask for that.
And a follow-up?
Yes, please.
A follow-up to Peggy. I have a question for you. You started off your testimony, and you said agriculture is one of the most stable industries.
Yes. I would like to know
how you would describe stable.
So, Vice Chair McLean, Representative Bosshart Davis. So, when you look at Oregon's economic history, Oregon agriculture has either been number one, number two, or number three, in spite of the intels of this world, and in spite of all those other kinds of things. Now, it may not be the most, it doesn't have the most growth or the most highest economic value, but it has been the most stable. If you take a look at what its value has been over the years, we know that we can count on Oregon agriculture to provide a certain amount of Oregon's total economy.
Thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate it.
Okay, yes. Oh, we think we have an answer on the phone, and so we are going to try and connect again. How are we doing?
Peterson, Madam Chair, thank you. We can determine, we do not have the figures on the acreage that would precisely be available should this be permitted to advance, but it was correctly noted that it is confined to the legislatively defined border region, which is a finite stretch 20 miles from the border, basically opposite Payette County, Idaho. And within that, it extends into Oregon only just a bit past Vail. So it's quite a finite area and the area directly impacted by the success or growth of Idaho. The other comment we would like to make is it is important to us that the committee understand that the growth in Payette County is not because it is a suburb of Boise. Economic studies make very, very clear that the growth are people working here in Oregon predominantly, almost 1,000 of them at the state-funded prison just outside Ontario, where we informed you it's 71% of their workforce, well-paid, good, solid jobs, are living in Idaho. That's the composition of the booming growth in Payette County. It is not feeding Boise any more than people living in our border region are feeding Boise. You could say that of Meridian, Nampa, perhaps even Caldwell. Payette County is not a suburb of Boise. The final point from our border board's perspective is that we are addressing via various programs and other opportunities that we've been permitted via our legislative empowerment to expand growth in the urban growth boundaries. That's a bit of a different beast. A, we don't need legislation to permit that. That's in place. So that's why you're not seeing a bill to develop in the cities that are part of the border region. But this is, as I said, B, a unique thing. There is demand for rural residential, for the good life, if you will, that is absolutely booming in Idaho and not permissible here. Finally, I just want to reiterate what I think Tiffany Cruikshank on our board covered quite eloquently, and that is our board, if you even read our charter and mission statement, absolutely believes that agriculture is the backbone of the border region's economy. We've done our homework. We've talked to growers and ranchers, and the land that this very thoughtfully and carefully worded proposed legislation would allow to be developed into residential is not farmable or ranchable or usable for other things and would have to hit those criteria, including, again, worth noting, the water criteria that was addressed as a concern. Thank you.
Thank you for your response. At this time, I want to thank the panel for their comments. Oh, excuse me, Representative Brock Smith.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Madam Chair, you mentioned something about the updating the comp plans. Well, one of the issues, and I know in talking to Judge Joyce, we've talked about this a long time. This is one of the issues that we've, that we share on both ends of the state, right? And my district and as well as yours. So Nathan, when's the last time you were over in Malheur County?
Chair McLean, members of the committee, thanks for the question, Brock Smith. I actually have lived in Central Oregon for over 20 years. And, I've got family in LeGrand, so I get out and around a fair amount in Malheur County. I'm proud to say I'm an active birder, so I get down into that region as well. There's some really good birding sites, Lake and Malheur counties.
We all know that Central Oregon is not
correct.
Eastern Oregon.
Correct.
In fact, the governor, I believe, just said that when she was in Bend last week. And so I am kind of concerned, and I appreciate Representative Post's comments with regards to finding solutions, because when it comes to Eastern Oregon and in rural Oregon in general, we're having problems with rural residential property. And it always seems that when it comes to the environmental groups, they always just want to say, no, you can't do it. No, you can't do it. And so do you think that any law, and this is a very broad question, but when it comes to the land use laws that were set in the state back in the 70s, that they should be set in stone forever and should not have to be modified in order to adjust to the changing conditions that we have in our state?
Chair McLean, members of the committee, thank you for the question. Representative Brock-Smith, we believe that the state land use system is always vulnerable to death by a thousand cuts and by precedent-setting exceptions in legislation. We also believe the existing system provides for periodic review and updates of comp plans and to reflect an evolving reality. And to answer this question and tie it in with your last question, we are not insensitive to the challenges of rural and particularly rural Eastern Oregon. We are keenly aware, being a neighbor in Central Oregon, of the economic challenges that they face. But we don't believe in false choices between sacrificing our precious agricultural lands for rural development.
Just one quick follow-up. We just heard on the people that live there that these are not high-valued agricultural lands, that you can't farm there, you can't grow there. And so are you disputing the word of the woman on the phone?
I would not dispute her words, sir. But I would say that uses change and agricultural uses show continuing innovation. And it's always remarkable to me that when I see new uses evolving all the time for agricultural lands. So,
thank you.
So I want to thank you all for your comments. I appreciate it. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And at this time, I'm going to ask Marianne Cooper to come up. And she's our last testifier on this issue, and then we'll close the public hearing on this bill.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair McLean, Vice Chair Post, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marianne Cooper. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau and the Malheur County Farm Bureau, both of whom are opposed to this legislation. I want to start out by saying we appreciate the conversations that we have had with Representative Finley about this bill, and this is truly for us coming from our local Farm Bureau. I think there are some pieces of this legislation that they think warrant further clarification, particularly around, impact on rangelands and impact on some of the lands that may not be croplands but may still be, again, viable for agricultural production. And just for them, I think feels like this is a conversation that hasn't been fully developed for them locally with our Farm Bureau folks. So with that, I would say I do appreciate, and I think I take to heart all the conversations that I heard earlier and the testimony from the local folks that this is a carefully crafted piece of legislation. I think they did do a very good job of answering some of the concerns that had been heard from the agricultural community, but I think there are still some pieces of it for us that we are unsure how it would play out in practice and just need additional information. And I think for our Malheur County Farm Bureau, they felt that we don't want to see, different regions start asking for different things, and pretty soon the system becomes a little different everywhere you go. And a little harder for folks to have the kind of uniformity that you need to have certainty long-term that land's going to stay available and that the next generation will be able to get into farming and ranching. So with that, I'd say we appreciate very much the work that the local folks went to on this bill. And locally, our folks are very interested, willing, able to have continued conversation, but don't feel like this is a concept that is ready for movement at this point.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing no questions, I'll thank the...
Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. And we are going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2456. And as you can see, we are going to go on now to House Bill 2315. And I'm going to open a public hearing. And I believe that we have Representative... Yes, there you are. Representative Bonham is coming up. Do you have a panel, or is it... Would you like to bring them up? Yes, and please just introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Vice Chair McLean, Post, honorable members of the committee. My name is Daniel Bonham from House District 59, which incorporates the western half of Wasco County, all of Jefferson, Wheeler, and northern Deschutes County. Many in this body will try. Pause for emphasis. Oh, I wasn't supposed to read that. That's stage. Try to argue with me that my district is the most scenic in the state. But from the Columbia River Gorge, the rolling farmlands of Madras, the painted hills of Wheeler County, Mount Jefferson, and the Sisters, including in the Deschutes Forest, it really is hard to argue with me. It brings us to today's hearing. One of the things that makes our corner of the world so wonderful is not just the scenic beauty, but the spirit that the constituents have and the true partnership that they have, neighbors helping neighbors. When we have a problem, it's not uncommon for us to come up with a regional partnership. It keeps the decision-making process local and brings together the stakeholders in our community. One dynamic example highlighted during our caucus exchange, which I'm sure we all enjoyed, I had the opportunity to have Representative Kenny Geyer and Hernandez out to my district and then was able to visit theirs later. But while we had them in our district, we actually detoured out of our district down to West Bend to show them the Forest Collaborative work that was going on there, where industry, the community, and the conservationist. I was so concerned I was going to say conversationalist that it's in my head, and I wrote it down so I wouldn't say it wrong. The conservationists came together, again, neighbor helping neighbor, to improve the forest health and improve resilience of the Deschutes Forest. The Nature Conservancy is a fantastic partner in that project and many other projects throughout the state, which brings us to House Bill 2315. We contacted the Nature Conservancy after that visit and asked them if there was anything we could help them do to expand their good work, and they said there was a statute that placed an undue transactional burden on them and other conservation groups interested in the stewardship and management of open spaces for conservation purposes. As you'll hear from the Nature Conservancy, the unintended consequences of the current statute results in real-time and labor costs for Oregon's conservation community that cannot be ignored. As with the forest I highlighted earlier, I am a firm believer that the role of the collaborative process in the building, in the collaborative process building and throughout the state, I want an effort that Oregon continues to balance the environmental ethos that make Oregonians special and the need to make sure the land management and community safety needs are maintained. After today's hearing, I look forward to continued work on this bill. To make sure that this bill represents the best that we can do to stop the red tape from slowing down work of our nonprofit partners and to maintain our resources for current and future generations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative. And are you Derek?
I am.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Derek Johnson. I'm the Director of Protection and Stewardship for the Nature Conservancy here in Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2315 today. We are grateful to Representative Bonham for introducing House Bill 2315 and for the committee for scheduling this hearing. The Nature Conservancy operates with a mission to conserve lands and waters on which all life depends. Since our founding in Oregon in 1961, we have led one of the largest conservation efforts in our state. Our success has been rooted in our commitment to find durable, nonpartisan, pragmatic, science-based solutions to address Oregon's conservation challenges. Our work would not be possible without the help of a dynamic board of trustees representing many businesses and communities and over 70,000 supporters from every county in Oregon. House Bill 2315 is very straightforward. It does not change the underlying law governing division of valuable EFU lands for non-commercial open space and conservation purposes. It merely improves current statute by providing a technical fix in the specific statute to allow for donations of properties by conservation-minded landowners. Oregon's EFU zoning statute, which is ORS 215.263, subsection 10, currently only allows such properties to be sold, not donated. By simply changing the word purchase to acquire, the limitation that currently exists can be removed for future conservation transactions. It alleviates the burden on organizations needing to go through expensive and unnecessary land purchase processes when the landowner's desire is just to donate the property. And finally, it presents no negative impact on state or local taxes, allowing residential units or structures on EFU lands to be inhabited and for those homes and structures to stay on the tax rolls. We're grateful to the Coalition of Oregon Land Trust and its 21 members, of which the Nature Conservancy is one, for supporting this bill, and we also appreciate the support of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Given our long history of work on land acquisitions and transactions in Oregon and around the United States, the Nature Conservancy is always striving to improve enabling conditions for conservation outcomes that benefit both nature and people. This is our primary motivation in urging the Oregon Legislature to consider and pass House Bill 2315, and we stand ready to work with the committee as you consider shaping our state's conservation future through sound policy solutions. Thank you for the opportunity to provide our perspective on House Bill 2315.
Thank you. Kelly?
Good afternoon, Vice Chair McLean, Vice Chair Post. For the record, my name is Kelly Beamer. I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. I represent 21 nonprofit organizations that work with private voluntary landowners to protect fish and wildlife habitat, water quality, open space, working farms, forests, and ranches. And I'm here before you today to testify in support of House Bill 2315. This bill removes a barrier and facilitates conservation of Oregon's important resource lands by allowing EFU land to be donated to a provider of parks or open spaces. Land trusts have a long history in Oregon of working collaboratively with both private and public stewardship partners to protect our natural heritage across the state. This includes completing transactions in partnerships with private landowners, Forest Service, and other entities. So we see that HB 2315 removes a barrier for charitable land conservation in Oregon. It is designed to allow land trusts, public entities, and other not-for-profit organizations to donate a property that they own and manage to another public or private entity that shares the same conservation outcome and mission. This fix addresses unintended consequences of placing a limitation on property transfers for conservation purposes. And thus, it saves conservation organizations time and money that they would otherwise have to go through to acquire property, which might mean for $1 filling out all the paperwork, spending literally days of staff time and expensive, often legal resources to go through a transaction that could otherwise be donated for the same conservation outcome. So, again, I just want to reemphasize our support for this bill and enabling conservation in the state of Oregon, and happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Post and then Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment on this is here's why this should be a slam dunk. I don't know the representative from wherever he came from, but I know this representative here. And the two of us are on this bill, and that's crazy. Me as a Nature Conservancy guy. And so there should be no question that this bill should move. I just want to get that on the record. This is amazing.
Thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. Thank you. Representative Helm.
The bill. Thank you. You got to check who you're asking to sign on. I know it's a new. Thank you all for being here, and this is really, in all seriousness, is a great, great step forward to remove barriers for these types of acquisitions. My question is there a deal that this is holding up now, or do you foresee any coming up that are going to immediately benefit by the change that you proposed and we're considering to adopt?
I can take that, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for the question. As you'll probably hear later in the testimony, the Conservancy is involved in a transaction in Central Oregon known as our Wild Haven Preserve. It's surrounded by national forest lands, Deschutes National Forest. And one of the things that we're exploring is there's a structure on the property, which is really, really cool, if anybody knows the site at all. And working with folks who are, you know, local and very interested in this matter, we've been trying to think of some creative solutions about how to partition the property in a way that would allow for the structure to be cared for, possibly by the Sisters School District for their outdoor environmental education program. And then the conservation part of the property be owned by the Forest Service because they own all the land around there. So that's this statute change would help make that happen so that the conservation portion of the land could go to the Forest Service. If we wanted to just donate the entire property, including the structure, to the Forest Service, we could do that today. But we're trying to find as good of a solution as possible. There are other transactions that I can think of in my past that were not Forest Service or federal projects where this would have been helpful to have at the time. But I hope that this facilitates. This is not about a particular transaction, but I wanted to answer your question directly. This is something that we see a need for, and other land trusts and organizations see a need for, to remove the barrier and have just more ability to put lands in conservation ownership from landowners who intend to do donative intent as opposed to sell.
Yes, please.
Well, my only observation then is you're going to want to use this sooner rather than later, and so it might be a good idea to consider an emergency clause.
There you go, Bill.
With reason. You're okay with reason.
Or some way to, Madam Vice Chair.
Yes.
Or some other permissible way of accelerating the early adoption of this bill.
I'm going to let another representative talk for a minute. And that would be the author of this bill.
Vice Chair Post, members of the committee. Representative Helm, to your previous question, I will say that it was this specific group and this specific opportunity that brought this to my attention. And I will say, and I don't mean to pump the brakes on this or deviate from what this wonderful kumbaya moment that we're having between you and Representative Post, but there have been a few things that have been brought up tied to this that I think, to use a buzzword that I've heard in the last, you know, 15 months of doing this job, you know, some sideboards on this. I think there just are a couple things that we need to specify in the language of this bill that will make it more palatable to groups that are interested in this bill. And so, and then to your latter question, you know, I think a 90-day clause or something to that effect would make sense to allow for this to move forward and not violate others, you know, concerns over emergency clauses being overly used.
All of your comments, and I'm going to let the three representatives continue their dialogue afterwards so they can come up with some thoughts on either a solution or an amendment or something of that sort. So at this time, thank you very much for being here, and I appreciate you taking the time to come and talk about this important bill. And then I believe we have one more. Do we have Nathan Hovekamp still? Yes.
Vice Chair Post, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on HB 2315. Again, I'm Nathan Hovekamp, Wildlife Program Director with Central Oregon Land Watch. We at Central Oregon Land Watch believe that what appears on first impression as an innocuous bill may have some nuances that we would just like to bring up. And ask that the committee please look at the full intent and implications of this bill very carefully. In the background of this bill, as mentioned in response to the question posed by the committee, is a precious 160-acre nature preserve called Wild Haven, as well as a 37-year-old legacy, a commitment personally from Governor Tom McCall, and a substantial current controversy in the Sisters area. Governor Tom McCall wrote about the Wild Haven Preserve and its dedication in 1982, and I quote, just as your house is the crown jewel of Wild Haven, so is Wild Haven a crown jewel among the more than 600 Nature Conservancy preserves. Your decision to give Wild Haven to the Nature Conservancy to be shared with the public in perpetuity characterizes your unselfish handling of this property and all of its flora and fauna. It is an act for which future generations will be thankful. On behalf of the Nature Conservancy's National Board of Governors, this is Governor Tom McCall speaking, I thankfully accept this living gift and pledge to you in the name of the Conservancy that it will always be managed in a manner you would approve. No one can duplicate your hospitality and wise teachings, but our hope is that succeeding generations will at least realize that to the Nature Conservancy, managing Wild Haven is a labor of love. So, end quote. So, what does Wild Haven and its history have to do with the broader bill currently before you, which concerns allowing land divisions on forest and farmlands and proposes simply to change the word purchase to acquire, where nonprofits are involved? We believe at Land Watch, we have a concern that HB 2315 may facilitate breaking up this precious Wild Haven Preserve, this 160-acre preserve that Tom McCall spoke so eloquently about personally. We are also concerned about a potential chilling effect that it may have on other parties considering donations of land with stipulations for protections in perpetuity. So we are just asking that the committee proceed with caution. We're interested in the buzzword of sideboards and a potential amendment to make sure that we're not facilitating a conveyance and breakup of land that was to be protected in perpetuity. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any questions? Thank you for joining us today. And I guess you came over 100 miles, so I appreciate that. Thanks for being here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at this time then, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2315. And we have one final bill today for an open hearing. And that is going to be House Bill 3355. And I'm going to open a public hearing. And I'll ask Representative Brock Smith, who's coming down to testify, to start us off.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Pennington, I'm sorry. And I guess I misspoke. It's 2355, so thank you. And I also, yes, please, welcome. And I do want to say, as you can see, we're having all the public hearings on these bills today. We also kept over till Tuesday another bill that we did not get to at the last meeting. And when Chair Clems gets back, then we'll have a discussion or a work session on these bills.
Madam Chair, Committee, State Representative David Brock Smith, House District 1, Charleston to West Roseburg, down West I-5 to West Cape Junction, back over to the beautiful Southern Oregon coast. Daniel, Representative Bonham and I, we can debate the beauty of our districts at another time, even though he has to get it in there every time. I bring you House Bill 2355 to discuss Mr. Pennington's farm in my district. Mr. Pennington has a small farm that does not meet the current legal requirements that we set forth with regards to cider businesses and legislation in 2017. And so what this bill does is it would remove the minimum orchard size requirements for cider business producing less than 100,000 gallons of cider annually on land zoned for farm use, so that Mr. Pennington can basically have a cider business that he has been working on for quite some time. As we discussed and we're talking about established 15 in 2017, we established a 15 acre minimum size. And Mr. Pennington will go and explain to you the size of his farm and what he would like to do. And so what we're trying to do is find a fix. As we discussed these land use issues within this committee, I think what is obvious to me is trying to find land use laws that fit all of Oregon is difficult. And what we're seeing is that rural Oregon is becoming impacted by the, if you will, statewide cookie cutter of land use laws in the state. And so we're trying to find areas and ways where we can fix that and carve out areas within rural Oregon so that we can create our own economic opportunities. And with that, I'll let Mr. Pennington, who has come up from district, to talk about his business and why he came to me for this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Brock Smith, and Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for hearing out this proposed bill.
And I just have to introduce you, put your name on.
My name is Dan Pennington, and I'm co-owner of Myrtle Glen Farm. We're a 27-acre permaculture homestead in rural Coos County. So our farm sits on Middle Creek, which is the middle fork of the North Fork Coquille River. And we're pretty much in the first valley that opens up in that creek, so we're really close to the headwaters. It's a really idyllic surrounding. We have some mature forest on our property. About half of our property is forest, half is pasture, farmland, and orchard. So essentially with the bill, we would have to cut some of our forest, and we'd have to plant entire monoculture, which is not really what we're into doing. So a little bit about what we grow. We don't do a lot of market farming. We do some. We grow garlic for Coos Head Co-op. We do a lot of bartering in the community. But what our goal is, and what we do is we grow or forage about 250 plants and mushrooms per year. And so that includes like 6 different types of tomatoes, different types of potatoes, but about 250 types. So we're really into diversity. We bring that food to our table. We serve it to guests through our small Airbnb business. And one of the impetus of what, you know, trying to grow this business is, you know, the bigger you get, the more you're kind of getting into some restrictions. And so when we had discovered the cider business law, we were, you know, really excited about it because it kind of opened up a lot of doors for us. We can expand our bed and breakfast. We can kind of get more legitimate with serving food. Right now we have to operate what's called cooking classes. So that gets us around. We can't get a kitchen license because we live in the house that we serve the food. So there's things we kind of have to go around in order to kind of facilitate this kind of dream that we have. A little bit about our orchard. We have about a half acre really mature tree orchard. It takes my partner Misha, who wishes she could be here today, but she's watching the farm. It takes us about a month just for us to prune. It's some really large 50-year-old trees in there. We do different types of fruit. So we have apples and pears and figs and I mean, you know, I can go on and list 250 things that we grow, but that would take some time. So we produce for ourselves and for bringing to the table, we produce both cider and mead. So cider from our orchard and then mead from our hives. And kind of our goal with doing this is to do kind of like low batch, really high quality stuff. So and really unique stuff. So for example, this year we have a Matsutake mead going on. So we harvested a bunch of Matsutakes and decided, hey, let's try some different ferment with it. So we kind of we're into that kind of low batch, kind of experimental type of fermentation. You know, so part of the business we're trying to build here at Myrtle Glen Farm is a ecotourism, agritourism model of business. So we take folks out to the mature forests in the Coast Range behind us, Dorner Fir. It's about 20 miles from our house. We take people out to go see the, you know, the tallest non-redwood tree in the world, and some of the other old growth and waterfalls and stuff. We also, in the fall, we take folks out and do what's called Finding Fungi, which is a three-day, three-night foraging for wild edible mushrooms, take it back to the kitchen and teach people how to cook them and process them. So these are the types of things that, you know, we've been doing this for about 4 years now, 4.5 years. We're kind of reaching that point where we're ready to kind of grow a little bit. And so with the cider business bill, we're really excited because it would start to legitimize our business. We could build a tasting room, keep bringing more and more people out to where we are. But we found the bill was the 15-acre requirement with the style that we produce food, which is in a permaculture fashion, which is kind of like closed loop system. So we don't use, you know, chemical sprays. We don't use tractors. It's very labor intensive. So that the thought of taking on 15 acres of orchard is like inconceivable for us. So a little bit onto the agritourism. Coos County is, you know, there's an opportunity for tourism in Coos County. It's the word that gets thrown a lot with agritourism, but we're, you know, one of those kind of successful stories coming out. But it does, you know, the legislation needs to kind of keep up because we can really start to grow these businesses in rural Coos County and other counties like it and start helping out other small-time farmers like myself. We're on what's called the Wild Rivers Coast Food Trail. So it's basically a group of businesses that focus on local produced food. We're on there as a lodging option. We'd really like to go on there as a tasting room, cidery. We think that bringing people, siphoning all that, you know, guest travel in the summer months when it's really busy, siphoning that off into kind of the more rural coast range really brings a lot of tourism dollars to Coquille and Myrtle Point and some of those towns that really never get to see that coastal influx. I mean, we're completely booked full spring, summer, and early fall. So, you know, agritourism is really something that is working for us. Okay, so more onto the bill. So, or onto the law, ORS 215.451. The cider business law, as you folks may know, that law was to kind of mimic the winery law and to kind of promote the agritourism into more sectors like cider and I guess now beer. They're making a law too. So we feel that we fit that requirement of the spirit of the bill, which is to promote agritourism. Unfortunately for us, the 15 acres, you know, just doesn't allow us to really grow into that. We'd have to probably drop about a, you know, $500,000 just to get things going, and we'd probably have to wait quite a bit for that fruit to start going. So it's really something that's just not feasible for us to do. I mean, we have goats and chickens and ducks, and we have a lot of other stuff going on. The cider business idea is not to inundate us completely and take us away from kind of the closed loop system, the different things that we have going on the farm. So like I said, we're really into doing the small batch, high quality, sustainable oriented type cider. We're excited with the provision in the previous law where the bed and breakfast would be able to serve 2 meals a day. Currently, if we were to get a bed and breakfast kitchen license, we'd only be able to serve 1 meal. And I'd like to end on a couple stats or just some notes here. In England, to promote what they call micro cideries, so these are cideries that are like 2 acres or under, they gave them tax exemptions. So it's something that, you know, other governments have thought this is something important for us to do. And I don't really see any downside to it. I see people in our county. I think it's something that we need to give people more tools in order to succeed on their land. And, you know, people like us who are doing so responsibly environmentally, it would, you know, really help us. So thanks for hearing me out.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. I appreciate your comments, and we have your bill in front of us, and when the chair gets back, we'll find out what's happening next. I also at this point want to say that the chair is off today because he has had some emergencies and he has been traveling and couldn't get back because of snow. So thank you very much and for being here today. I'm going to close the House Bill 2355 hearing. I'm going to remind us that the one that was carried over was House Bill 2363, and this work will all be passed forward in the schedule. Does anybody have anything for the good of the order? All right, thank you all for joining us today. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.